My husband had foot surgery this past weekend.
Okay.
So he's in a boot and on crutches for 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. When you were a kid, did you ever like want to be on crutches?
Yes.
It seems cool. The attention part is like...
Yeah, one, attention. Two, it's like, oh, a fun accessory.
Right, yeah.
And then if you're ever on crutches...
They suck.
The
worst thing ever.
Like, truly, within seconds, you're like, this is the worst possible mode of transportation. Right. Get me in a wheelchair. I need that rascal scooter right now.
Right.
I grew up in the time when pillow pets were really popular, and so it was trendy to, like, put little pillow pets on the tops of the crutches. So, like, that was such a desirable thing, right? To, like, be on crutches so that you could put mini pillow pets as your, like, armpit support.
Should I be buying these for my husband?
Yes.
Yeah, you should.
He needs a pillow pet.
That'd be so fun.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith to Beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Elise McCarter.
Still here,
well,
still
you're
successful.
With me more, as always. And our, you know, special
substitute
guest, rotating guest.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, the fourth member of the Beyond Sunday
team. Oh, wow. Thank you. I'm so honored.
Pastor Cassandra Nagel.
Hello.
Maybe you're a comment member. You like pass through every so often.
Yeah. Maybe Jesus is the fourth member. It's hard to say, you know?
Well, when I was in choir, they called me a movable peg, you know, because they could just stick me into whatever voice part they needed.
Okay,
so, yeah.
Brag.
Right. I think that's a way to say I'm really good at singing.
I'm so good I could be anywhere.
No.
Sorry for making fun of you.
It's okay. I'm used to it by now.
And Pastor Cassandra, you were also with us in Alaska.
I was.
Yeah,
yes.
we talked a little bit about that last week. We did some Alaska.
Yeah, everybody
brag.
But me went to Alaska.
You
so.
Know, and well, I'm sure Patrick told you that we, well, not I, but some of our group saw bears.
I was one of was one of them. So
we got back to the campsite, and every person, child or adult, who saw a bear made sure to tell.
Right. They will not stop talking about it.
I have a fairly decent photo of a bear that's currently on the youth group Instagram. So,
yeah,
I mean,
with the babies.
With babies. Yeah.
No, that's pretty cool.
It's with my zoom lens, and it was very far away. But it's you know, you could definitely say, that's a bear.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like, so.
Yeah.
And a very close one of a moose. That was alarmingly so.
Yeah.
Too close. If
too close
if we're being
comfort.
Honest. Yeah.
Yeah, the locals got mad at us, but that's okay.
Yeah. They were playing disc golf right next to me, saying the moose is dangerous, and then they went right back to playing disc golf.
Yeah.
So,
their discs could have hit the moose.
Yeah.
Know?
So, I mean, like,
yeah.
I get that what they're saying. Yes, the moose is dangerous, but they were also pretty okay with it. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, we're going to talk about the church today.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Shocking.
And spiritual manipulation.
Ooh.
How to spot it and what to do about it from our friends relevant. But before we get there, let's talk about some spiritual manipulation.
Oh.
Let's see if we can spot it.
Can we spot it? And what do we do about it?
You can probably spot this one.
Okay.
You know, when you think about heaven, when you think, what am I going to do in heaven? Have you ever thought, where am I going to live in heaven?
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
Sure. What's my house look like? Mm-hmm. All that stuff.
Yep.
Well, good news. A church is selling plots of land in heaven.
Oh, my gosh.
Sure.
What year is this again?
This is this year. This is a church in Mexico.
Right.
You know, you want to prep for eternity by selling plots of land in heaven. All right. So the pastor has received permission from God, and the church is offering heavenly real estate for the simple price of $100 per square meter.
Wow.
Okay. Again, meter, I don't know what that means.
Are we having tiny homes in heaven?
Well, I guess you got to buy a bunch of meters, right?
Like, right.
You know, it's nonsense word. I get that it's kind of like a yard, but
a
I'm
meter,
not quite sure.
A little bit longer than a yard.
Yeah,
and
but
3 meters
is nonsense word.
It is. I'm an American. I don't need to know that stuff.
Right.
All right. Yeah.
Made up.
Maybe, I mean, do you want to maybe buy just like a small one and like, I'm going to go up with my house, you know, like
just stand permanently.
Well, like it's going to be 13.
Oh, I'm thinking like 1 square meter, just going all the way up, right. Like an elevator.
I probably would want maybe 4 meters at least, you know, maybe, you know, that's only $400, but you know, you imagine I can go up. What are the codes in heaven? How high can I build my house?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think here? $100 per square meter of heaven real estate.
I mean, obviously classist and discriminatory.
I'm curious, like, do windows cost extra? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, they haven't. This is just,
you know,
yeah.
What about the mineral
this is
rights?
Just a, this is just like, a, I guess, a square meter situation.
Yeah, I got to take a look at
the blueprint. But like, is there going to be a door? Is there going
to
be
Do we have contractors in heaven? Do we have to build
That's
ourselves?
True. Am I buying just land?
Do we like, you know, hire angels to carry our materials?
Right. Or, yeah.
You know? Right.
Let me take a look at that HOA. I just want to say, right. You know, I'm not saying no, but I just want to take a look. You know,
well, here's another question. Do you get to pick your neighbors?
Right.
That is a good question.
That's a big, yeah. Like,
that's really the most
view
important
or
question.
A mountain view,
right.
You know,
yeah.
They're not giving me enough information, so I wouldn't buy.
You're not going to buy?
I need more info.
Okay.
Yeah. This is like better than HGTV Dream Home. This is like, you know, heavenly.
Well.
HGTV. So.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars worth of these heavenly plots have already been sold.
Oh, my God. Who's buying this?
Maybe I should be. I don't know. I got to get in on the...
What happens when you get to heaven and then you don't have it?
You know,
are you mad? Like...
I don't know. It's heaven, maybe.
Is this part of the tears that are being wiped from our eyes in heaven? It's like, I invested in bogus real estate.
Yeah. I got to heaven and I didn't pre-buy. I got to get stuck with the leftovers. I mean, the Supreme Court just ruled, you know, you can't sleep, you know, without being fined or arrested. So I don't know what God's policy is.
What are they going to do with the money?
That's a good question.
Church, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they going to build like a heaven replica? You know,
nearby. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're not going to feed the poor with it.
Yeah, this is not a generosity campaign. The God did not be like, hey, I'm going to give you some prime heavenly real estate. Yeah.
Right.
Use that money to take care of the destitute. Yeah. I assume that's not the deal that's been struck with God here.
Yeah. What denomination is this church?
I don't know.
Maybe we need to do like...
Entoms is the name of the church. Entoms. I don't know what that means.
That tells us nothing. Yeah.
So.
Maybe we should just do a modern reformation and go down there and, you know...
Yes.
Nail
do some theses.
Some stuff on the door.
Yeah. Is there anything you want in your heavenly home? You know, that you're like...
A Japanese toilet seat.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Yeah. All right.
I was going to say a cat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
You know.
You know, I want... you know, a bookcase where I pull a book and it like opens up into a secret room. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of like younger me is ashamed that older me owns a home and I don't
have
that.
Yeah.
Like why own a home at all? Like
if
you don't have a secret bookcase room.
Yeah. Underachiever.
Yeah. Like what's the point of all of this? Like if you're not doing that, you know, and I get it, you know, so, you know, I want a room, you know, also, in that secret room is, you know, for Star Wars Legos, you know, on display.
Yeah.
You know,
fun.
So,
yes,
yeah, that's an obvious. So Japanese toilet, a cat, and a secret Star Wars Lego room. That's our
I like all of these things.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like we could be neighbors.
Right, we
sure,
could.
Do we get a discount if
we buy next to each other?
Yeah, can we go in on one a lot of plot, you know, divide it up?
Right.
Yeah.
What happens if you change your mind later too? Like,
yeah, do you
actually I hate these people now? Like,
do I want to sell my heavenly home?
Maybe there's a rotation every 1,000 years. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you get, that's true.
You get new neighbors.
Get a little bored, right?
It's a lottery system, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, what if, like, you know, the neighbor across the street, like, they're not keeping up with their heavenly yard? And in truth, that's probably me. But still,
I'm the problem.
You're like, ugh. You know, does God come in and like, hey? Tape a little thing to your door in your mailbox, like you gotta take care of that.
You're being evicted.
Yeah.
You gotta go down to purgatory for a little while and then come back.
All right, well there you go. Yeah, I'm sure you could Google them if you want to, you know, get in on the ground floor.
Right.
To this.
No, you don't want to be on the ground floor. Then people are gonna walk on your.
That's true. You
roof,
don't want. I don't
you
want
have
upstairs.
Bad upstairs.
I definitely don't want upstairs neighbors.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
I want to be the bad upstairs neighbor.
It's another good way to.
Sure.
Or another good reason to just build up. Then you don't have any neighbors.
Yeah.
To stomp on your ceiling.
All right. Well, let's jump into our main article from Relevant here: spiritual manipulation, how to spot it, and what to do about it. Whew, I think this says Thomas Stanson.
That is that one hard?
Okay,
Christensen.
Okay,
oh,
look,
yeah.
I'll show you
font.
Here. It's like hidden. It's white lettering, but it's on top of like a Bible that's also white pages.
And
so,
like a beige couch.
Yeah. So it is not the easiest. All right, I zoomed in. Yeah, Christensen. All right, there you go, Thomas. All right, spiritual manipulation. Is this a thing in the church?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Robert Morris is a major megachurch pastor, recently came out with some sexual abuse that he committed as a younger man to a 12-year-old and kind of classified it as like indiscretion, but not like child abuse, you know, like, geez. And, you know, assault. And now it's come out here 40 years later. And so he's been resigned. He's resigned from his position. And this is not a new thing. Mm-hmm. This is a thing, you know, that we kind of plays around often. All right. So Thomas is going to say here, you know what? One of the things I find most disheartening in this world, if I walk into a church service pretty much anywhere in America and ask people to raise their hand if they've been hurt by a church, specifically the leadership of a church, nearly everyone will raise their hand. You know, I guess this is a bit of a, he's making an assumption here, but I think it's maybe reasonable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anecdotally, for sure.
Yeah. So what do we think? You know, do you think the majority of people would raise their hand?
Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
I think so too.
I think you're always going to have some sort of like hardcore holdouts that like really, for lack of a better term, like drink the Kool-Aid of whatever, you know,
sure,
environment they find themselves in that will just like not on principle.
Yeah.
But I think the average person, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, or they've gone to one church their whole life and that church has just been one of those ones that stayed relatively clean, you know, from like marital indiscretion, financial fraud, or, you know, church hurt, you know, like that they've just been able to like navigate those storms or avoid those storms better, you know, like, which is, you know, so I think that's possible. But I think if you have gone around different churches, you've probably been in a situation where there has been some hurt by leadership. And it doesn't necessarily mean that like the senior pastor or associate pastor or youth pastor is like committed a, you know, adultery or assault, right? Like even just like an abuse of power or made you feel small when you raised a question that you felt was reasonable, but they didn't want to hear it. You know, like that is an abuse. That is kind of a, you know, a way that you can be hurt by church leadership. So even if it's not like this is a legal issue, you can still have church hurt.
Right.
All right. So he kind of says like, hey, no church is going to be perfect. And I, you know, we get that, like, you know, and every leader of a church is also not perfect, that they are, you know, flawed individuals. And I like to assume that most of them are doing their best, but they are still flawed individuals within that. He kind of quotes Nadia Boltz-Weber, who's a ELCA pastor.
We know her.
We know her. Yeah. Friend of the podcast. Not really. But, she tells people who want to join the church that she is the founding pastor of House of All Sinners and Saints in Denver, that we will let you down. That's kind of like her motto to new people who want to join the church.
Yeah, it's demotivational. I like it. Yeah.
This actually was talked about in one of our Bible studies at Lord of Life on Sunday, this exact quote.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. One of our members was sharing that when Nadia leads a new member class, all the people go around and talk about, you know, why they're there and what they hope for. And then she ends with this speech, right, about, you know, I will let you down, the church will let you down, and, you know, asking them to kind of be resilient, right, and wanting to, you know that God won't let you down, right, even when, like, the imperfect leaders and other people that you're with are, right? Like, if you stay through some of those trials, you'll like see how the Spirit is working and moving. So I thought that was interesting that
it popped back up.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's the flip side of that too, you know, that I think we also should highlight here is that it's not necessarily just like church leadership fails to let you down. Sometimes people fail in their expectations of church leadership,
right?
Like that they have the expectation that the pastor is going to be there for their emergency, yet should also take time for their family. And like those things are going to come into conflict. And sometimes taking time for family or vacation is going to win. And that doesn't mean the church let you down. It means your expectation upon them was not reasonable. Or my program that I've invested in that I think is valuable has been shifted to the back burner for a new program that they think is valuable, but I don't. And that's not necessarily the church leadership like intentionally looking at you. I mean, like they're failing as leaders.
Right.
That's an expectation that you had that was not met. And that you're going to feel hurt and let down. I wouldn't necessarily say that is the fault of the church leadership.
Right. Like some healthy ownership of your own expectations too.
Yeah.
And also, I think, you know, that encourages some healthy separation between God and church leadership too, right? Like this idea of recognizing and saying, okay, well, you know, church leadership is not, does not equal like the hand of God, you know, necessarily. And I think that kind of like subtly gets missed a lot.
So Thomas is going to say, you know, while we can't get, you know, well, we cannot get caught up looking for a perfect church, what are the habits of a church that is healthy? All right, and we've got a couple of bullet points here to kind of run through here. So let's take a look. These are healthy churches, churches that are going to, you know, at least do their best to not let you down. And we can kind of weigh them on how we're doing or what we expect from a church. All right, so healthy churches have open and honest conversations.
I think it sounds good.
Yeah, surface level, I'm sure. With
I think
it.
I think it's easy to say that that's what you want.
Yeah.
Sure. I think it's a lot harder to live that out, right? Because it might be easier to have open and honest conversations about something like who is welcome at the communion table, right? And really, you know, a lot harder to have open and honest conversations about other things that brush up against our political leanings or our socioeconomic status and things like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually healthy and honest conversations, sometimes we think that they're going to be easy conversations, at least easy for me conversations.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants like, I want an open and honest conversation that is difficult for me to work through.
Right.
And I, and my worldview is challenged within that,
you
know? So yeah, I think that's one of those things that like, people say, yes, I definitely want that. And then it happens like, dude, I really actually want that. You know, like, you know,
well, we want to be able to say what we think.
Yes.
And it ends there.
I get to be honest about my opinion.
Right.
And you don't get to be honest about yours. Yeah. Because it's not right. It's not mine. Yeah. Yeah. But I do think like when you think of a church, clarity matters, right? Like who they are, what they believe, what they're up to matters. And, you know, I've gone, you know, done some like church investigation where you go to a church's website and you want to know like a couple of questions, you know, maybe going in, like you would think like, what do they think about women in leadership? What do they think about the LGBTQ community? Right. Like, and look, I can admit there's a lot of churches out there. They have varying degrees on what they believe about those things. But when you go to their website, you want to be like, just tell me what you think. Right.
Right.
And a lot of churches dodge the issue, you know, like they don't want to say we are not supportive of the LGBTQ community.
Right.
So you got to like, kind of comb through their language to kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, I mean, you know, for churches that are more on the progressive or lefty side, I think need to be super overt. Like you can't like hope that people will get it.
Yeah.
Like you got to like spell it out. Like it's fine if you think a woman should be a pastor and you could be here. And it's fine. And even if we don't have women pastors currently, we support that. All right. It's fine. Like we support the LGBTQ community in leadership. And even if we don't have that currently, we support it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think sometimes you got to be pretty clear. This is what we're about.
Yeah.
Because I think when people, you know, that's kind of the front page of like, you know, your website or your social media presence. And, you know, if people are like, I don't know if I'm going to walk into that building and it's, they're going to have the same views as me. And that's a brave act. I don't think that a lot of people are going to walk into that building, especially in 2024. Right.
Yeah. Those what we believe pages, I think, are so telling. Right. I mean, for me, usually the first thing that's listed is like, the Bible is inerrant, right?
Yeah.
And that tells me a
like,
lot.
Goodbye.
Right. And then you get into, you know, quoting Genesis, marriage is only between a man and a woman, right? I think, you know, those pages tell you a lot, right?
Yeah.
And just can give you important information, right? And in some ways, I think that's good, right? To have that clarity, you know?
Yeah.
And to, even when you're having open and honest conversations, right? That doesn't mean that you want to like speak harm upon someone else, right? And so I think having some of those like shared beliefs, right? Like if you say as a community, we believe that the Bible is inerrant. That's like, that's the fence around your conversation and you can run around within that. So I think it's a, how open is an open conversation, right? Like when you have to wrestle with as a community, these are the values that we have and we want to hold ourselves to that, but also welcome questions and doubt and without like risking someone else's, you know, like validity as a human.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a fine line, I guess.
Yeah. I think that this is, you know, if you're interested in like, I want to join a church, I want to know, are they a church that has open and honest conversations? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, making a phone call, asking like, what is the missions and visions? What is the hopes and, you know, for your church community and your neighborhood? Yeah. And even, you know, is the church open about sharing its budget? You know, like, yeah. like its financial commitment to its ministries, its staff and the community, that should be as public as possible. Yeah. You know, like, not necessarily, I don't think you need to say like, this is every single staff person's salary on sure. staff, not right. necessarily that, but like, this is the money that comes in, this is what it's used for, and mm-hmm. we're clear about that, and everybody is on the same page. Yeah. You know, that's, you know, I think the clearest, like, a church is not going to have open and honest conversations about hard things if they're keeping their financials secret, because yeah. you know, that's
I had a colleague who encouraged me, like, when you interview at a church, ask them, when was the last time you, like, your congregation had a conflict and Ooh. How did you work through it? And I think, you know, even as someone who's looking to join a church, I think that's a very valid question to
and
ask.
And also, you get the tea that way,
too. You get a little bit of drama.
Drama.
But sure. I mean, I think it says a lot to be like, oh, like, there was this issue and, you know, we prayed about it and moved on, right? Yeah. Or like, we had these types of gatherings, or we sent a letter, or I mean, whatever that solution was, right? That can help inform you yeah. about like, does the way that this church engages through conflict or difficulty, does that align with how I want yeah. a community of people to be of faith, right, to be engaging through that?
I think
right.
that's a great idea, you mm-hmm. know, and I could say, stepping into a church, you know, I came in yeah. and a previous hiring decision was a conflict for the church, and mm-hmm. I stepped in and it was not directly related to me, but I inherited some of that conflict early okay. on
yeah.
and that was kind of like, well, I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't even mm-hmm. here.
Sure.
I don't even know what happened. And right. yet, in some ways, I'm experiencing this conflict. And
yeah.
so that kind of being blindsided by that, or like, I don't even really know how to navigate the situation because right. I don't have any information.
Yeah.
Only I know is people are upset and it's coming back on me and I didn't do anything.
Like, right.
So
I'm brand new. Don't pick on me.
Right.
No, at least know the reasons you should be picking on right. me, okay?
There are many, yeah. but it's not those.
We're going to get there.
You know? I just need more time. Yeah.
All right, number two. Healthy churches readily admit mistakes. All right, what do we think about this?
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Yeah. So first, you know, he's going to quote Andy Stanley, who's a relatively famous evangelical pastor, who says, like, people will forgive a leader for making a mistake, but they will not forgive a leader for failing to communicate. And I think this does have weight behind it. You know, the idea of, like, a leader making a mistake is one thing, but the cover-up is always worse.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when you think of even, like, the big major things, right? Like, the Catholic Church scandal amongst its priests is obviously bad,
yeah.
but the cover-up made it infinitely worse,
yep.
To the point of like, so much trust is lost, you know, because, you know, of those things. But, you know, not every church is dealing with something as big as that. But like, hey, we mismanaged part of the budget. We invested in something that did not go as we envisioned. Mm-hmm. And we expected something to kind of generate money for our church and we actually lost it. That's a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I think some openly and willing saying like, we did this, this happened, this is how we learn and grow from it, mm-hmm. is information that's important for the congregation versus everybody kind of knows it failed, but everybody's pretending like, that was great. Like, what a win yeah. for us. When you're like, I don't know if that was actually true.
Right.
You know, or we tried a new thing and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Like, we can get past it. Yeah.
Yeah. This one's difficult for me because I think even when individuals or communities practice this, right, of like yeah. admitting mistakes, I think there can be spiritual manipulation through that, right?
Sure,
like,
can be performative,
yeah, and like yeah. in the way, and you know, later it's, there's a line about, you know, putting lipstick on a pig, and so I think about, you know, what does it mean to for a community to readily admit their mistakes, and like
yeah.
what types of expectations or like boundaries do we have within how we do that
mm-hmm.
in a way that doesn't turn into like, you know, like well, you know, I was following, you know, I mean, you can just start to use language about how God was calling you to do something, or, you know, it just, it can get tricky really fast. So in the most optimistic of perspectives, I think that this is a great practice, but I think even when, I think that there are unhealthy churches who readily admit mistakes
For sure.
and it doesn't have some transformative effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Like using the Catholic priest scandal as an example, let's say if the Catholic Church had moved swiftly to, you know, do, you know, whatever they did not do in this situation to address the issue.
Yeah, remove abusive priests and protect victims.
Right.
Yeah.
Then that would have kept that issue as reflecting the values of the individuals, right?
Yes.
But they did not, and they made those issues the values of the church.
Yes.
And like that, it, to me, it becomes that divide, right? Whereas, you know, if somebody, leadership, makes a mistake and it is owned and dealt with, you as a congregant can process that as being reflective of the values of an individual and not your church. But if it's not dealt with, it's swept under the rug, then that becomes indicative of the values of your community. And that's a much bigger problem and much harder to process.
I think the other thing that's hard for me about this is, you know, I think about a church like Lord of Life, and we're not huge compared to, like, you know, some of the mega churches around us, but like, we have a lot of committees. We have a lot of breakout groups. So like, what happens if like I say something crappy in a meeting and it ruffles up, you know, one committee or one group of people, right? Like, should we be like sharing that sort of drama with the whole congregation, you know? And so I think, you know, fortunately and unfortunately, there are so many places where these types of challenges can happen behind closed doors in smaller settings. And then what does it mean like for a leader to not communicate, or a church to not communicate about something that's going on? And then the rumor mill happens, you know?
Yeah.
So there's just so many nuances to it that it can be really hard to know, right? What's the right decision. And maybe it's not the same for every situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to, Patrick Sander, you said something interesting here a few minutes ago, that churches can use admitting mistake as a spiritual manipulation itself. And I think that that is an important thing to kind of recognize, that oftentimes, and it, you know, I mentioned Pastor, or no longer Pastor, Robert Morris kind of did the same thing, right? Like an indiscretion appears, comes out public, and they kind of downplay it and admit a mistake and kind of lean on the relationships for forgiveness and the expectation that we're a Christian church. We forgive. Nobody's perfect. Everybody can be redeemed. And we kind of use that to manipulate the church, that even though this was an awful thing that happened, you should forgive the pastor or you should forgive the leader, and they can continue on as a leader. And I think what is important for a church to readily admit mistakes is to also readily show these are the steps to make it right. And for some pastors out there, I think it is important to say, like, they were had an indiscretion sexually or financially, and to say, like, this was a mistake. They are loved by God, and because of that mistake, they can no longer be a pastor. Like, those are the steps to make it right. And even if there's not a legal issue, or we've turned the information over to legal authorities, if it is that, if it's not that, but to say, this is how we fix it. And I think that matters, right? To say, like, yeah, I, you know, in case of Robert Morris, sexually abused a 12-year-old 40 years ago. There might not be legal repercussions, but to safely say that means you can no longer be a pastor makes sense for that, for a congregation, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, that means even if you don't go to jail because it's been 40 years, we have a statute of limitations in our country, and that's fine. You've lost the privilege to be a shepherd. And that's just the reality.
Yep.
And we're going to get into kind of we're going to circle back again on this with the fourth point. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the cynical side of me, you know, in the ELCA, we have some of those parameters in place, right? Yeah. Like, when those things come to light, it happened in my home congregation, it's happened in other congregations in the synod, that person is removed from the roster. There's typically some sort of interview or like disciplinary process within the synod and things like that. And there are also times that are published on the internet of when the ELCA or its synods did not follow those processes, sure. right? And so the cynic in me is like, well, some people are, you know, going to be able to get out of it too. And that's yeah. a horrible perspective to have, right?
I think it's a reality.
Like, no, it is. Yeah.
It's like, it like gives me like a creepy crawly feeling, right?
Yeah.
But that's the hard thing is sometimes even when we have those values and steps in place, like there's still going to be, you know, detours, right?
Well, that's the manipulation aspect, right?
Yeah.
Because
sure.
a person doing something bad is not necessarily manipulation, but then leaning on your charisma or your relationships or
sure.
trying to throw scripture at it to get out of the consequences is manipulation.
Well, and oftentimes, like, the congregation will say, like, well, I know the perpetrator, but I don't really know the victim. Mm-hmm. So that's yeah. That's the relationship I have. You know, I don't right. have a relationship with the victim. Or everyone knows the perpetrator and a few people know the victim. You know,
right.
like, they're not as important, in quotes, to the congregation. Mm-hmm. So like, hey, the figurehead or, you know, the lead pastor, they are very important to what we do.
Sure.
So we gotta protect them to protect all of us, even if we think it's wrong. And yeah. I think that is icky. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on because we don't want to spend too much time talking about this. Healthy churches embrace encouragement.
I guess I don't understand. I never have been like, please encourage me less. I'm just not into it.
I think this is a contrary to how often does your church kind of like wield the sword of shame in its messaging
yeah.
and kind of its thing, like shame about tithing, shame about attendance, shame about volunteering, shame about who you are and things mm-hmm. like that. And I think this is, you know, a difference between, you know, here in the Lutheran Church, I think we have a healthy understanding of law and gospel. Like sometimes a sermon or parts of a sermon should point out our sinfulness and mm-hmm. our ways that we are not living up to the life that God has laid out for us. I think that's important. And sometimes, you know, a sermon leans heavier on that and kind of with the idea of like the next time the congregation is together, the next time the people are together, they will hear a more heavy kind of message of how they are loved in spite of those things or even mm-hmm. alongside those things. Mm-hmm. But if all you're hearing is you are not good enough, like, and what you're giving is not enough, and what you're doing at this church is not enough, and your attendance, oh, you chose to go to baseball practice on Sunday morning?
Mm.
That shows you where your priorities lie.
Right.
Is baseball going to get you into heaven? Like, that's not, sure. like, I don't think that is healthy. Now, I think, you know, I think it's important for congregations to hold a standard of, like, we do think you should choose church
yeah.
over baseball practice on Sunday mornings. But using the sword of shame in that way is not necessarily, it's not a healthy church option. Mm-hmm. It might be an effective option, but I don't necessarily think it's a healthy option. So this is kind of what he is going to talk about is a shame. So I think to contrary that is to do more encouragement, is to kind of highlight where people are, highlight growth, and things like that. My wife works in addiction recovery, and you know, she sometimes says like, hey, progress, not perfection, is our standard, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as long as we're making progress, we are good. Mm-hmm. And if we're not perfect, it's okay. Like, if you backslide, but you're still making progress, you're still getting better, that is a healthy recovery attitude. Mm-hmm. But when we use this shame of perfection, nobody will live up to it. And then all you'll feel is like beat up by your own church.
I think there's a lot of ways in which churches can practice this, you know, idea of encouragement too. One of the books that I read in seminary that I still think about all the time is about stewardship, actually. And it's very against what they call the offering box score. So like if you've ever been at a church where they post the like monthly offering amounts at the back of the bulletin, almost always the numbers are going to be behind, right? Mm-hmm. Giving is almost always going to be behind because then you get Christmas and people give a lot of Christmas, right? Like churches just, you know, people don't give to churches in a super regular basis.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reasoning behind it is like, you know, you have to think about there might be an individual or a family who's really leaning into giving more than might feel comfortable for them. And when you open up that bulletin and see an offering box score that says we don't have enough,
mm-hmm.
how does that make you feel? Right?
Right.
Like how does that? And so I think even some of those, like that's not a leader or someone, you know, verbally communicating to you about that, about the need for more money. But just that you know, that little table in the bulletin can really feel like shame, right? Rather than encouragement, when what that individual or that family is doing is incredible, right? Like in leaning into that. So just, yeah, that's what came to my mind as we're talking about this.
No, I 100% agree. And I also think, like, if your church leadership is not practicing healthy encouragement of you as an individual, if you feel like what I do is unnoticed and nobody cares, I think it's a good conversation to start having with people in leadership. You know, these can be blind spots for a lot of leaders and a lot of people at the top that they just forget to highlight the efforts that they don't necessarily see as regularly. And I think that this is important. You know, I in my previous position as our youth director, I tried to be very encouraging to our kids, especially whenever they were doing something new or are engaging in leadership or service of our congregation or in our community. But, you know, sometimes we miss it too. Like, and I can admit that. So, so I think, yeah, practice encouragement. All right. Last one. Healthy churches aren't selective. All right. So I think this can go in a couple of ways here. So first is the idea of like, and he's going to point out, dress a certain way, certain color skin, certain adherence to a predetermined set of regulations to be welcome in any church, you know? And if you have that expectation for your church, I don't think that's a healthy church. And I would agree.
Yep.
And I guess like I can say that, you know, I predominantly worshiped at white spaces, you know, and I can admit that in my life. Yep. So I've never had to go into a place where I'm like, I'm the obvious minority based on the color of my skin.
Yeah.
Or I obviously could not be in leadership because I'm a straight white man. You know, like, you know, I've never had to do that. But I have had churches where a predetermined set of regulations and rules have been set up. And it's up to you, the new person, to kind of fit into what we do. You know, like you got to change who you are, how you act, what you do to kind of fit in here. And that does not feel super welcoming. And some churches do that intentionally, and sometimes churches don't even know they're doing it. And that's maybe sometimes the more discouraging is they have no idea that they have these predetermined rules and regulations that they expect visitors to follow. And when they don't, they're going to get looked down their nose upon and be like, who are these people trying to come in here?
Yeah.
What do you think about this too? This healthy churches aren't selective.
I'm thinking about worship. I mean, even though we say all are welcome at the table, like there's just so much that happens within a worship service that is implied.
Absolutely.
And is not communicated super clearly, right?
Language.
Like we have members and their parents came to visit around Christmas time and you know, they came up to me afterwards and were like, we didn't know if the wine was the red or the white, like liquid, right? Yeah. I mean, just something that, like, if you've been coming here for a long time, you probably have learned it by now, right? That the wine is red and the grape juice is white. But, right? I mean, like, even something as subtle as, or what might seem small as that, right? Can feel like a barrier, right? You know, because maybe that person doesn't, you know how to ask, doesn't, you know, want to risk drinking the wrong one. I mean, you know, I mean, there's just all those sorts of things that, are not always clearly communicated, right? And can make even the experience of worship feel like a barrier, right?
Yeah.
Or feel inaccessible. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like I think sometimes churches should, in the same way, like McDonald's or, you know, the mall will have like secret shoppers who go in and kind of like report back on their experience to corporate. I think sometimes churches should have that because, like, if you're an insider, you have no idea what it feels like to be an outsider. Like, I've definitely had people say to me, like, yeah, of course we're welcoming. I feel welcomed. I'm like, yeah, but you know people. Like, yeah, that's like saying, like, yes, I feel loved within my own family system. Like, yeah, that should be true. Like, but to say like that means my family loves everyone is not a correlation, right? Like, that's not the way things work. So, like, in some ways, like, it would help, like, for us to leadership to say, like, hey, let's find friends, family, or people outsiders, like, come in here and tell us what your experience actually was. Like, you know, we need to do some secret shopping here. And so that we can kind of reevaluate how are we being selective? How are we using language or expectation to place upon a visitor that is unfair, you know, and how can we combat that against it? Because it's easy when you go into church to talk to your friends, like, it's much harder to go into church when you don't have no friends. Like that's much more difficult. That's a much harder act. And I think that That's something that matters. The last thing I wanted to tie into this too is this idea of like selective, back to our kind of admitting mistakes. I think if your church is selective on how it's handing out forgiveness, this is an unhealthy church. Like forgiveness for insiders, but not for outsiders is an unhealthy church. Of like, our infidelity was forgiven by Jesus. Their infidelity is clearly a culture gone wrong. Like, like our mismanagement of funds is, you know, forgiven by Jesus and nobody's perfect. But their mismanagement or their theft or their whatever, that is evil, you know, and things like that. And so, like, I think this idea of like, when we mess up, we're doing it in the name of Jesus, in a sense. And when they mess up, look at the, you know, look at the culture around us, look at how the world is falling apart. And so I think we can be very selective of like, we're forgiven, you still got to earn it out there. Which is, you know, contrary to the message of Jesus, especially this idea of like, you know, the cross gives us grace and mercy for all. So, All right, any other thoughts on healthy churches, spiritual manipulations? Yeah, I wish we kind of got a little deeper from Thomas here into like, what are the spiritual manipulations you see in church?
A little light on the manipulation. Yeah,
we kind of went contrary. You know, relevant sometimes. I think has a strong headline and not as quite as substantial there. But I think you know, good conversation regardless. Okay, well, if you liked what you heard, we got an email address. It's like beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
I
think that's it.
I think,
pretty sure. Listen to a previous episode if you're like, I definitely want to email them and I'm not sure that's right. We got it. We got a website, beyondsundaypodcast.com. So
David usually does this part.
He does. And I usually stop paying attention or start trying to make jokes so that it makes him mad. All right. Any last thoughts? Great. All right. Well, we hope everybody had a happy 4th of July and, because we're recording this before, so hopefully we all come back next
week.
We all come back with all of our fingers. So
and all right, stay off the internet.
Just for the good of all of us.
Right.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.